On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. As chaos descends on Lebanon this week, the neoconservative cry in Washington is on to Iran. Israel is fighting for its security. The neocon cry is that it's our war, and a regime in Tehran behind it must be taken on. Joe Klein, columnist for Time magazine, sees things differently. Klein has watched Washington and the world for a long time, and in the George W. Bush years, he has seen Iran grow not weaker, but stronger. The White House has cut down Iran's rivals, the Taliban and Saddam Hussein, and it has mired American military power in Iraq. Unintended consequences, surely, but America under Bush has been Iran's best friend, is the word he shares this week. In a moment, we'll be joined by Times Joe Klein and later in the hour by Bush defender Robert Pollack of The Wall Street Journal. But first, we turn to Aman Jordan and Rami Khoury, editor-at-large for Lebanon's Daily Star newspaper. We usually find him in Beirut, but he, like thousands of other Beirut residents, is away from home this week. Rami Khoury, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Are you in touch with Beirut, with Lebanon? What are you hearing from friends and associates there?
Well, we're constantly in touch by phone and email and watching the extensive coverage on Arab television, which is far more accurate and comprehensive than anything you're getting in the United States. What we're hearing is, depending on where you are in Lebanon, everywhere it's difficult because traveling around is difficult, telecommunications are erratic, food supplies, medicine, things like that are inconsistent. And in the south especially, in the eastern areas, there's constant bombing. The infrastructural facilities, the ports, the airport, things like that, bridges have been hit. So the whole country is really in very, very bad shape, and the situation is seems to have been pretty constant now for the last 4 or 5 days with the pattern of Israeli bombing.
Rami, you say that you're getting a very different picture there and a more accurate one on Arab television news than Americans are getting. It is big headlines here, and it's all over the television news. What's the difference in what you're seeing between the two media?
Well, I think what you're seeing is a more accurate, a more comprehensive picture on Arab television in terms of the Israeli impact on Lebanon. What you're getting in American TV and media is that, well, this all started when Hezbollah kidnapped these two soldiers. What you're getting in Arab television and the Europeans is a much more comprehensive picture showing that this is a cycle of warfare that's been going on for many, many years. And the Israelis, the Lebanese have serious grievances still against Israel, and as do Palestinians, and that this is an integrated cycle of war and conflict throughout the Middle East between Israel and the Arab countries. It's not just that Hezbollah kidnapped these two soldiers and that set off the war. And you're also seeing the devastation much more close up in terms of the impact of what Israel is doing on everyday life, and 500,000 people displaced inside Lebanon, the real sort of human devastation and suffering, which you tend to get very little of on American television.
Rami, Israel says it has to go in and deal with Hezbollah here, that it can no longer accept those thousands of missiles, many Iranian supplied, on its northern border. This is the time to do it, and it's going to act. Washington appears to be supporting that. Is there also unhappiness with Hezbollah among Lebanese friends and associates of yours? They're in Jordan. How's the Israeli strategy, the Israeli approach here seen?
Well, I think there are clearly people in the Arab world, including Lebanon, who are unhappy with Hezbollah and what it's done, and hold it against it, that the country is being devastated. But I think there's much, much more anger against Israel for what Israel has done, the disproportionate devastation that Israel has unleashed on Lebanon. And I think the really important point that we have to look at now, the really important question that Americans, Israelis, Arabs, everybody has to ask, is there a military solution to this issue? And the answer from what I've seen here in the last 35 years of living here and watching this, the answer is clearly no, because Israel has done this 3 or 4 times before. It's occupied southern Lebanon. It's had border zones, international demilitarized zones, foreign observers, blue lines, green lines, red lines, free fire zones, surrogate armies in south Lebanon, kidnapping Lebanese, killing Lebanese militants. It's done absolutely everything it could possibly do, including occupying south Lebanon for 18 years, and it hasn't worked. So the answer has to be that for a political problem, you need a political solution. There is no military solution to a political problem. And this is something that Hezbollah also has to understand, that it cannot just use missiles and its militant resistance tactics to solve what is essentially a political problem. So hopefully this will be the lesson that will come out of this process.
There's concern in the U.S. and elsewhere about the potential for wider conflict here or unrest in moderate-led countries like Jordan, where you are now, that could lead to even the falling of moderate regimes in Egypt, in Jordan, because of sympathy in the streets for Hezbollah and the Lebanese. Do you see a widening conflict? Do you see potential instability, for example, there in Jordan?
Well, certainly there's tension around the region, and certainly there's a widening gap between the sort of average person on the street, public opinion, and the leaderships in many countries, including Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, the Gulf. In most Arab countries, you're getting this situation. I don't think any Arab country is in danger of having its regime fall or having a revolution or anything like that. People are genuinely angry at Israel, at the United States, some people at Hezbollah, but mostly the anger is at Israel and the United States. But this anger does not represent a threat to the regimes as of now. If this goes on for another 3, 4, 5 weeks and you get massive more devastation on the images of Arab TV of what Israel is doing in terms of killing babies and innocent people and destroying the infrastructure, it's possible that there may be, you know, demonstrations and political turmoil. And, of course, you have people who will exploit that in the Arab countries, possibly Iran, possibly others. Tension, unrest, turbulence is very much already a part of the Arab political scene. But I don't think overthrowing any regimes is a real danger. But the United States has to understand that its policies are leading to a radicalization in the Middle East, and this is turning against the United States as well as Israel.
A lot in play, and it's not over. Rami Khoury and Aman Jordan, editor-at-large for Lebanon's Daily Star, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Joining us now from New York is Joe Klein. He's political columnist for Time magazine. His column, The Iran Factor, appears in the magazine's current issue, or you can read it at our website, onpointradio.org. Joe Klein, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be here, Tom.
Joe, it goes on day after day. We read your take on it earlier this week. Quoting a Middle Eastern diplomat saying the U.S. has been Iran's very best friend. What's your take as you continue to watch this unfold on the connection between Bush foreign policy and what's going on? Condoleezza Rice says we want a long-term solution. That's been the cry for a long time. Are we getting it, Joe?
It's kind of hilarious to hear Condoleezza Rice talk about a long-term solution since the Bush administration hasn't worked toward that. The Bush administration's policy from the start has been hands-off, to step back from the Middle Eastern diplomacy, which is usually frustrating and doesn't make very much progress. But the fact that you have people talking is usually better than having them dropping bombs on each other. And throughout the Bush administration, the decision was made that first Ariel Sharon and now Ehud Olmert were going to be supported, and that we weren't going to talk to Yasser Arafat because the president thought he was a bad guy, and I think that our disdain for diplomacy throughout has been a real problem. Let me give you one example. I was talking to a Syrian official 2 days ago, and he said, you know, we have lifted all visa restrictions on Americans and people coming across our border from Lebanon. We want to talk to the United States about arranging a major evacuation from Beirut, a humanitarian evacuation, but the United States won't talk to us. Now, that diplomat may have been blowing smoke, but you don't know unless you talk to them. And we pulled our ambassador out of Syria. I think it's going on a year and a half now. And that's just foolishness, I think. And it exacerbates all of the worst impulses in the region.
So in what sense, then, do you see, or does the diplomat you talk to see Washington as Iran's best friend? Tongue in cheek there? I mean, they're talking about potentially even going after Iran.
Oh, no. I think that the reason why people, especially the Sunnis in the region, see the United States as Iran's best friend is I think it's actually threefold. First of all, we took out the Taliban, who were Iran's enemy. They almost went to war against the Taliban in around the year 2000. Then we took out Saddam Hussein, who was Iran's very worst enemy. And finally, you know, there's a graffito on the wall of the old U.S. embassy in Tehran that I saw when I was there. It says, "On the day the great Satan praises us, we shall mourn." And to a certain extent, our demonizing Iran, which deserves a fair amount of demonization, but our shutting them off from the diplomatic process, our, you know, exacerbating it in that way, empowers the very worst elements in Iran. It empowers the extremists like President Ahmadinejad and some of the mullahs. So I think that on those in those three ways, we've made life a lot more comfortable for Iran, and we've also created the conditions in Iraq and elsewhere where, you know, the conversation isn't on Iran's nuclear ambitions, but it's on Iraq falling apart and the Middle East falling apart.
Joe Klein, let's take on the immediate issue, what Israel and Lebanon are facing. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Newt Gingrich. He wrote in USA Today this week, you know, imagine 50 missiles launched from Cuba exploding in Miami. What would the U.S. to do? We'd go hammer and tongs at the source of those missiles. Do you blame Israel for going hammer and tongs at the thousands of missiles right across the border in Lebanon?
Let me address that in one second. I think that we should probably make clear to the listeners that the Middle Eastern diplomat I spoke to, who said that we had been Iran's best friend, was speaking ironically.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking about the unintended consequences of America's aggressive policy in the Middle East. Now, as for your question, I agree with Newt. In this case, the conflict was instigated by Hamas kidnapping an Israeli soldier and then Hezbollah kidnapping two Israeli soldiers. And, when I was listening to Rami Khoury before talking about all the things that Israel had tried that didn't work, one of the things that Israel tried that apparently hasn't worked is complete withdrawal. They pulled out of southern Lebanon. They pulled out of Gaza, and yet the jihadis continue to attack them. And I think that given those withdrawals, Israel wants to send a very clear message that we may have withdrawn, but we're not doing that because we think you're beating us. But we're trying to calm this thing down and to retreat to border. Orders that are more defensible.
So President Bush might say, you've got to look at more than just that. You've got to follow the thread on through, Joe Klein. I mean, he's quoted on Tuesday, the president, saying, sometimes it requires tragic situations to help bring clarity in the international community. I want the world to address the root causes of the problem, and the root cause is Hezbollah. And then he talked about working, you know, to isolate Iran. He's saying, come on, Joe Klein, and this perspective, we've got to go to the root here.
Well, I think that he's talking in abstractions, and it's very easy to talk in abstractions when the 50 missiles aren't landing on the White House. You know, Rami was talking about Israel's disproportionate response. I think that that if you're living in northern Israel, you're thinking about Hezbollah's disproportionate response if the missiles are landing on you. Standing back a bit, I could say that I believe that Israel had an absolute right to respond to this very witting and purposeful provocation. I think it's probably gone on a few days too long now.
And what about the bigger picture, the sort of the White House policy, you know, Bush pushing back against what he's called the false stability of dictatorship and stagnation, basically saying, look, you can't make an omelet without breaking eggs. We're going to break some eggs in the Middle East to make something better here.
We're not talking about eggs. We're talking about human beings. We're talking about children's limbs being blown off. A great part of the problem of the Bush administration's Middle East policy has been that it's been so theoretical. Going into this, the theory was a benign domino theory that if we took out Saddam Hussein, we would be greeted as liberators, democracy would flourish, and it would spill over into the rest of the Middle East. Well, you're getting the exact opposite, a malignant domino theory where every last place is becoming more unstable, including and perhaps especially those countries that have had elections recently.
Let's get another perspective here, Joe, if we may. Also joining us from New York, Robert Pollack, member of the editorial board for the Wall Street Journal, recently back from a trip to Iraq and Afghanistan with Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. He has opined in the journal in favor of the Bush approach here. Robert Pollack, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I do object slightly to you characterizing me as a Bush defender. I would say my policy here is more that I don't think it's America's fault when foreign bad guys do bad things.
Point taken. Speak to Joe Klein's observation. He sees a malignant domino effect, a kind of dominoes falling in exactly the way the U.S. should not want them to as a result of Bush policy. What do you say to that?
I don't know that we see that at all. I mean, remember that Lebanon has thrown off Syrian occupation and held an election, which is a great thing. I mean, it's a shame now that this new independent Lebanese democracy is suffering because of the Hezbollah faction, but we can't just because that there's this conflict going on now, we can't ignore the good things that have happened in Lebanon in recent years. And, you know, similarly in Iraq, yes, there are difficulties there, but it's pretty amazing that they've gone through and held two elections, held a referendum on a constitution, despite all of the sectarian violence, and there is a lot of it, the unity government is holding together. So I'm not sure that we're seeing a malignant domino theory. We don't know right yet.
So you still see long-term, the groundwork here being built for a beautiful future in the Middle East?
I think long-term is the operative word. I think anybody who expected it to go quickly was probably naive, but I think some kind of exogenous shock was needed on that region, which was clearly stagnating under dictatorships like that of Saddam. And I think we have introduced a lot of new ideas into the region, and there's a lot of ferment. And I think there's every reason to expect that it could, obviously with growing pains along the way, turn into something good over the long term.
Joe Klein, exogenous shock needed to get this thing, sort of shock therapy to get this region on the right track.
It's really great when you're a neoconservative theorist to posit that sort of stuff. When you're an actual civilian living in Baghdad, it isn't so much fun. I want to point out that more people have been killed in Iraq in the last 3 days than have been killed in Lebanon or Israel over the last 9 days. For Mr. Pollack to say that things are kind of okay because we've had these elections, that's lunacy at this point. Let me point out a few facts. The level of attacks per day is more than double what it was a year ago in Iraq. They are building barricades in neighborhoods in Iraq because of the sectarian violence. We are slipping ever more quickly into a civil war situation. And it's a situation that has been brought on by the Bush administration's utter fecklessness in prosecuting the phase four of this war. Phase four is stability operations after the invasion. I've spent a lot of time talking to the U.S. military, and those six generals or seven generals who called for Rumsfeld's resignation, they are the tip of the iceberg. The U.S. military is distraught over the situation, and they well should be. It is causing a rift throughout the region between Sunni and Shia. We may well be seeing the beginnings of a regional war. I hope we're not, but Bush's carelessness has brought most of this on.
Robert Pollack, your newspaper in its news columns yesterday, page one headline, Bush's risky Mideast strategy, seek change, not quick peace, and the question mark, the question on the front of the Wall Street Journal, not on the editorial page, new order or chaos ahead? I mean, in the news pages, they're saying, we're on a super high-risk road here. Are you fully confident that we're headed toward that glory land and not into radicalization of the region, a kind of a doomsday regional conflict meltdown? With everything that's gone on, with the kind of downside that Joe Klein's pointing to, how's your confidence level right now?
No. I'm not fully confident at all. Like I said, we don't really know where it's going. But I think it's a mistake to sit back and think, as Mr. Klein seems to assert, that this was a war of choice and we went in and destabilized the region for no particularly good reason. I mean, remember that Bill Clinton bombed Saddam Hussein for 4 days in 1998 to degrade his alleged WMD capability. And if we think that taking out Saddam destabilized the region, imagine what kinds of effects it would have had on the region if we let him go free with everyone thinking that he had WMD. If taking out Saddam emboldened Iran, wouldn't have letting him go free equally have emboldened Iran. And I also want to take issue with Mr. Klein suggesting that I'm some kind of armchair theorist. I've been over to Iraq 4 times. I don't know many times he's been there. I've spent more than a month on the ground there in the past few years. I was there right after the war. We were greeted as liberators. I grant that things are not going very well right now, but for him to suggest that the whole thing was misconceived and that Iraqis didn't want us there in the first place is simply false.
What about when George... Joe, please, yes.
Yeah. Once again, Mr. Pollack and the Wall Street Journal editorial page presents these extreme false choices. The choices weren't between Bill Clinton's pinprick attacks on Saddam Hussein, or the choice wasn't between doing nothing and a frontal invasion. We had an inspection regime in place. We had him pinned down. The inspectors weren't finding anything. I would have been in favor of far more aggressive armed inspection teams in Iraq, a quiet UN occupation in 2003.
What, Saddam was going to let in armed inspection.
And by the way, yes, Saddam did let those inspectors
yes.
in. And let me finish because I let you finish. When I talk to military people in this country and when I talk to the people in the intelligence community, they were very concerned about the real struggle, the real long-term war, which is against radical Islamist jihadis, against al-Qaeda. They believe that the war in Iraq was a diversion from that. And just to make my position entirely clear, I was opposed to the war until the first boots hit the ground. I'm against timetables. I'm against any kind of withdrawal now. I think that we have a moral responsibility to stay and try and secure it. I just don't see any serious thinking within the Bush administration about how we do that. There isn't even a strategic thinking process going on right now within the White House or the Pentagon about how we do that.
And the Wall Street Journal headline, New Order or Chaos. I mean, that's not exactly a comfortable uncertainty this many years after the U.S. went in. I want to begin to bring our listeners in. Jesse's calling from Bowman, South Carolina. Hi, Jesse. How do you see it?
I see it. The Bush is doing the right thing. Nobody's ever going to solve this problem between Israel and Lebanon. I said, just let them fight it out. I mean, all the talk is not going to help. 60, 70 years, these people do not want to talk. All they want is Israel gone. It's never going to stop.
But, Jesse, is that an Armageddon scenario? Does that leave everybody fighting everybody and blood all over?
What's going to happen anyway? They can talk for 50 more years, and Lebanon's going to keep bombing Israel. I mean, if they did that to us, they would be gone. They would be gone.
Jesse, we've got it. We hear it. Let me get another view. Steve is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Steve. How do you see it?
Hi. I was due to actually travel to Beirut in 10 days. Obviously, I can't anymore. And the thing that I've seen when I've gone there in the past is it's mixed, but very pro-American, obviously pro-American in many parts. And you saw that just last year with the current government opposing Hezbollah in their theater revolution to get Syria out.
Opposing, but not getting rid of them. And how do you think Lebanese feel about the U.S. today?
Well, I'm afraid that with the U.S. administration doing anything to try to stop Israeli bombing of their country, they're probably not very happy with us. If they were just bombing Hezbollah, that would be one thing, but they're bombing the whole country, and it's like we heard before, little kids getting blown up, et cetera.
And we've got the whole picture going on there. Steve, thanks for calling. Robert Pollack, you hear Jesse in South Carolina saying, let's go. This is the only way. Bush is going to take on the big picture. But where does this end? Are you worried about radicalization of the entire region? And if that happens, what's the state that conflict goes on with? If it's a radicalized people, kind of sea to sea, how do you end that?
Well, I think the kind of thinking we have to guard against here is the thinking that there are really good options when we have bad people doing bad things overseas. I mean, you go one way, you get bad, some bad outcomes. You go another way, you get other bad outcomes. Yes, people may be radicalized by some of the actions that Israel is taking. On the other hand, is it preferable to allow Hezbollah to sit in southern Lebanon with 13,000 missiles aimed at Israel? No, I don't think it necessarily is.
George Will writes this week that the Bush administration has fallen into a trap of thinking that violence itself is vindication, that that's the breaking of the eggs to make the omelet. He's saying, wait a minute, this has gone too far. You're just getting violence. It's the chaos path.
Well, yeah, I think that what George Will is referring to is, you know, the increasing chorus, and I think he wrote about this among the neoconservatives, especially people at the Weekly Standard, that it's now time to take on Iran. And I think that there's a very clear indication, as I wrote in my column this week, that Hezbollah would not have done this without the approval of Iran. I think that Iran is feeling very empowered in the region, but I do not believe, you know, I think that the consequences of our taking military action against Iran at this time would be insane. I mean, for people to call for that, I think we've reached the point in the movie where the men in the white coats come and take the neoconservatives.
Ahmed is calling from McLean, Virginia. What do you see, Ahmed?
Yeah, I just want to say that right now it's very important for all of us to see how the U.S. public image in the Middle East is responding to the crisis right now. Our unequivocal support for Israel is not helping it, and I feel that for the U.S. to show complete support of Israel and at the same time not show any support to our previous ally, the Lebanese government, who is democratically elected at all, we have to understand that it is not helping us. And Israel is not fighting the Lebanese government, but in fact they're fighting Hezbollah. They might be part of the government, but also not showing any support for the Lebanese government will not help us, especially with Iran.
The whole country is taking a hit right now. Ahmed, we've got the perspective. Robert Pollack, how about the Iran question? On to Iran, is that in your playbook as well, or is it the white coat time, as Joe Klein says?
Well, I definitely agree that the Hezbollah attack was launched with at least Iran's approval and probably with its encouragement. And I think it was launched as a diversionary tactic. Well, for one, as a diversionary tactic, so people would pay less attention to the nuclear problem, and also as a way of saying to the world, hey, if you want to confront us, we can stir up a lot of trouble. What is that say to me? That says, first of all, I think we have to beat back this provocation. We have to tell them that their military option by proxy, which the Washington Post calls it this morning, by the way, not the right-wing Wall Street Journal.
But this is more than beat back. This is a root and branch approach.
We have to tell them that cannot be tolerated. If there's going to be any chance for a diplomatic solution, we have to tell them that their own military option is not going to be tolerated.
Robert Pollack at the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. Mr. Pollack, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Cyrus is on the phone right now from Gettysburg, Maryland. Hi, Cyrus. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing?
Very well. What do you see?
Basically, as an Iranian myself and talking to family members in Iran, I have seen a trend that's very not good, and that is that with this new policy with Bush is that the mullahs are actually getting more power in the region. And I think with being as an Iranian, they want this because at the same time when the war happened with Iran and Iraq, the United States thought that the Iranians were just going to give up, but actually unified the country into one goal, and that is fighting against Saddam. And I think the mullahs think the same thing, that if United States, by agitating United States, and if conflict were to arise, the country would actually unify, and it would just actually make everything even better for them.
But Cyrus, what about the other message? With this very, very fierce Israeli response, does it not send a message to Tehran, don't mess with us, or we will level your proxy, your compatriots in Hezbollah?
Well, basically, I don't think the mullahs are actually even taken back by this. I think they're actually wanted this response by giving Hezbollah the go for the missile attacks and the kidnapping. Because as everyone might not know this, for the key for the Middle East to be stabilized and for Hezbollah to be removed or anything to happen, it is not by bombing them. It is actually Iran is the key, because Iran is the main supporter of Hezbollah. And I think the longer we put this on the back burner, the more power these mullahs are going to get. And that is exact opposite of what we had, the Iranian people had hoped with the Bush administration.
The Iranian people hoping for something different. But this is on the front burner now. Joe Klein, you've spent some time in Iran. How do you see the shockwaves of what's going on in Lebanon rippling through that very complex political picture there? Who do you see it strengthening?
Well, it's very difficult to know what's going on within the government in Iran. There isn't much transparency. There are, multiple, repetitions of positions. You have a supreme leader, you have a president, and you have a generational struggle right now between the traditional mullahs like Ayatollah Khamenei and the younger generation of more radical sorts like President Ahmadinejad, who represents the point of view of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, who are the patrons, the sponsors of Hezbollah in the world. And so it's really difficult for us from the outside to get a better sense of what's going on. I do think that we've reached the point where it is really important to sit down and talk with these people if they're willing to talk with us. There have been opportunities in the past. We turned down an opportunity during the Clinton years. The Iranians then turned down an opportunity at the end of the Clinton years. There was a chance in 2003 to begin conversations. If we can begin them now, and I would do it without any sort of qualification, one-on-one, us and the Iranians, maybe we'll be able to start a good process. I'm not optimistic about it, by the way, because I think the Iranians are feeling very strong right now. And I think that across the spectrum in Iran, everybody from the most liberal to the most conservative believes, at least everybody I've spoken with, believes that Iran has a right to a nuclear weapon.
So if you're not optimistic, and everybody seems to agree that at the moment nukes are on the way, they haven't been derailed yet, then does that not make a harder line the only way? If you're not optimistic that talking will work.
Well, a harder line can make it worse, as it has in Iraq. I mean, if we hit Iran, just think of what they could do to us. Just think of what they could do to Iraq. They could make, the American military's life there pretty miserable. Hezbollah is a major international organization that hasn't had any compunction in the past about killing Americans. And we could bring on, God forbid, terrorist attacks in this country, not by al-Qaeda, but by Hezbollah. So, what the Iranians, I think what Rob Pollack was saying before is absolutely true. The Hezbollah message in Lebanon was a message to us as well. It was a message that if you try and mess with us, there are a lot of ways we can mess with you.
It's a long conflict. A lot of people have played a role in it. I mean, if you look back, look way back, George Shultz and James Baker and Warren Christopher, Madeleine Albright. I mean, did the Bush administration just inherit this, or did they? Are you so confident that it's really their doing, that it's grown to this very scary kind of scale right now? Or is that an inherited thing with deep root system that they're just having to deal with?
Well, it's an inherited thing, clearly. But it did seem for a while that things were getting better as a mild reform movement took hold. And also in 2003, there was a moment when the Iranians thought, wow, they just came in and took out Saddam in 3 weeks. They're pretty powerful. Maybe we should start talking to them. There was an opportunity at that point for us to talk with the Iranians. The Bush administration's policy has been, we don't talk to evildoers, and that's really limited our options. All I'm saying is this. That part of the world, as a caller before said, has been a mess for quite a while. The Bush administration inherited that mess. It has had a series of choices where it could have made things a lot worse or a little worse or maybe a little better. And the options that it's taken have made the situation worse and have reduced the possibility that people will talk to each other rather than hurl bombs at each other.
To where we're asking in front page headlines, new order or chaos in such a region. Mark's calling from Boxborough, Massachusetts. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I think that Mr. Klein is right in his present assessment. I think the situation has become worse. The fundamental problem is the United States is not seen as caring sufficiently about the lives and well-being of Muslims. And every day that this destruction of Lebanon goes on drives home that message even more. But I want to say something else. We got in this position because not only of people like Mr. Pollack and those who willfully ignored the potential deadly consequences of this, but because the debate in this country is so far skewed to the right, you have Mr. Klein here. Mr. Klein, I have issue with you. You have said on George Stephanopoulos' program on May 2nd that we should keep the use of tactical nuclear weapons on the table against Iran. You also have said that you were against this war from the beginning, but that's not what you said when you were on Tim Russert's show on February 22, 2003, and you said, war may well be the right decision at this point. In fact, I think it probably is. And my point is this. The debate in this country is so far over to the right that we have on the program a man who was himself a neocon enabler, Mr. Pollack, and Mr. Klein, who professes to be against the war, but who has, in fact, given support for it and has given cover to the Bush administration throughout. And my question is, where are the people that said at the outset, this war is a mistake, don't do it? Where are those voices, and why have they been marginalized?
Mark, let us pick it up.
Can I just defend myself?
Yes, please,
here,
Joe. We got some very close listeners here. People are paying attention.
This is part of the left wing insane blogosphere. They pick on two things that I've said. First of all, I apologized for the way I put it about Iran, and I was very clear also in that Stephanopoulos program that I didn't think that the Bush administration had the moral standing to take military action in Iran at this point. But when you're in a situation like that, if Iran, if we found that Iran had set off a suitcase nuclear weapon in New York, I think that obviously a nuclear reaction would have to be on the table. It's just a very unpleasant thing to think about. If the caller had been reading my column in the months leading up to the war, he would have seen that I very frequently attacked the premise of the war about the same time as I made that unfortunate comment on Tim Russert's show.
Yeah.
I did a column talking about Israel being the casus belli that dare not speak its name and the foolishness of the neoconservative benign domino theory. What I did at that on that program was something I had been thinking about, and I didn't remember that I'd actually said it in public. It had been unfortunate. My thinking was, they're going to go ahead and do it, and I hope they at least do it well. It was a kind of defeated statement after months of having opposed it.
But I regret
having made that statement.
But you can't
take that against all the other things that I said and wrote during the months leading up to the war.
But what about Mark's central question? Is it insane to ask if the American conversation has drifted to a midpoint that's losing track of other options? I mean, you yourself described the Bush policy as disastrous, sort of setting the table for chaos here. Does that say something about where the midpoint or the center of gravity in the American conversation has gone?
Well, I think the American conversation has drifted toward banality more than anything else. I mean, the lack of knowledge about the region, the lack of knowledge about American foreign policy is really a long-term, serious, serious problem for us. You know, I keep on thinking about what my parents told me about Franklin Roosevelt at the beginning of World War II. He told everybody to go out and get maps so that they could follow the progress of America's troops. He became the nation's geography teacher. George Bush had an opportunity and he had a responsibility to do that starting on September 12th. He hasn't done that. And too often, I think that we in the media gave him the benefit of the doubt, appropriately so, after September 11th and going into the war in Iraq, maybe not so appropriately so. But I do believe that we have allowed, we have responded to what's been coming out of the Bush administration. And my greatest dismay with the Bush administration over time has been its willingness to play politics with war, its willingness to use the war as a bludgeon against the Democratic Party, and its unwillingness to set up a bipartisan war cabinet, which is what presidents have traditionally done.
Will history record that as a successful policy? We're seeing reporting today on Republicans, getting much more critical on the situation in Iraq. Bush's poll numbers are very low. So has he got a winning strategy there?
Oh, I think it's been disastrous in every which way. I think it's been disastrous politically, diplomatically, morally, you name it. It has really diminished the United States and the world. We're in a terrible hole, especially in Iraq. The situation in Lebanon this past 10 days has really diverted us from what is, the bottom falling out in Iraq. So the caller is right that we haven't had a supple enough conversation. And I hope that in the future, and I'm sure now in the future, it's going to be much, much harder for the Bush administration to take unilateral military action. We've learned some stuff from this. What we've learned is that the only really reasonable time to use force is when we're attacked or when we go in with a major international coalition, including either the imprimatur of the United Nations or of our NATO allies.
You say we've learned that. I say it's still an open question.
I hope we've learned
it. Where the power lies. Ridwan is calling from Baltimore. Hi, Ridwan. You're on the air.
Hello. I was wondering, I realized that there is something that I think our government and the Israeli government is overlooking in trying to solve the problem. When they're looking at a problem, they're looking at the symptoms, I think, which are really these terrorist groups like Hezbollah and the military wing of Hamas. If they would solve the problems that arise in these areas, like Israel pulls out of Gaza, then chokes it off economically and creates this social situation where people become desperate, that, I think, is what sets up these groups to operate. If we took out those kinds of problems, that's the bags we should be breaking.
Ridwan, let us look at that. Joe Klein, 11 or 12 or 13,000 missiles in southern Lebanon doesn't look like a hypothetical, but Ridwan says it's not the real problem. What about Israel's instincts here, Israel's foreign policy, as it were, joined at the hip in many dimensions under George Bush? What's the Israeli responsibility in Joe Klein's view?
Well, I think that everybody knows what the outlines of a real solution here would be, and it would involve much greater concessions than Israel has given in the past. They're going to have to retreat from almost all of the West Bank. Jerusalem is going to have to be the capital not only of Israel but also of Palestine, and that there's going to have to be a major effort, as the caller says, to try and build a middle class in Palestine, because you can't really have democracy without a middle class. People like Rob Pollack talk about the fact that we've had elections in Iraq. There are Iraqi observers who say that they were no more than a census. You found out how many Sunnis and how many Shia and how many Kurds there were. I think to have real democracy and to have a real chance of stability, you absolutely have to have a flourishing of private enterprise in these regions. And both the United States and Israel should be really working hard to see that that happens. But you can't have that as long as those missiles are being fired.
So, Joe Klein, President Bush taking heat right now from the left or center and from the right, which says he's not being tough enough on Iran. We'll probably hear that from Newt Gingrich tomorrow. Where do you think this is going? Condoleezza Rice headed to the UN talking about long-term solutions. Not a ceasefire, but long-term, which sounds like more of the same. Or are we on a new path here? Are we being forced onto a new path?
Well, the president has gotten to this place the old-fashioned way. He has earned it. His policy has been a series of platitudes, of broad sweeping statements. He and his administration haven't done the detail work, the scut work that you have to do to prosecute a war, to have a foreign policy, to have successful diplomacy. And as long as you have the kind of situation we have right now in the administration, and we've had in the administration, of people not taking the details of this sort of work seriously, not taking up the Syrians on their offer of a major evacuation from Beirut, for example, we're going to have very serious problems. And I don't see this thing getting any better unless, the people over in the Middle East just get tired of killing each other. But certainly it's not going to be as a result of our doing anything to make it better.
Joe Klein's word on Bush foreign policy, disastrous. Tomorrow we'll hear from Newt Gingrich. On Monday from the Weekly Standard's Bill Kristol. Joe Klein at Time Magazine, author of Politics Lost. Joe, thanks very much for being with us today. Great to have you.
My pleasure, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.